You have found the Business Broker Growth Show with your host, Jason Cutter. This is the podcast for brokers who are ready to stop hoping for deals and start growing their pipeline. Our goal is to bring you strategies, stories, and insights that will be a catalyst to move you quickly from transactional deal makers to trusted advisors. Time for Business Broker Growth.
Hey everybody, Jason here. Welcome to another episode of the Business Broker Growth Show. Today I have with me Mark Hartman from Hartman Rhodes. He is an M&A advisor, business broker, author, previous business owner with a successful exit, and an interesting approach to business brokerage, which I find very fascinating. And I really am looking forward to this conversation based on the times Mark and I chat before. Mark, welcome to the podcast.
Hey, great. Thanks for having me on.
So let's, even when we were talking before hitting record, I was trying to think of the best way to start, because there's both your journey to get to here, which involved a business that you built, that you sold, eight figures, and three-time Inc. 5000 CEO honoree. And then there's the book, which just came out earlier this year, it's 2026, which is The Sweat Equity Payday, which I got a copy of from you and read, and it was so valuable for the business owner. So if we look at those two things, I'm gonna let you choose. You weren't prepared for this. Where would you like to start, Mark? It's your show.
All right, well, let's start with the backstory, huh?
That's okay, let's do it. So let's talk about that. So tell me about that journey of the starting, the owning, the exiting, and how that went.
So business brokerage, M&A is a second act for me, right? Way back in 2002, Ethicare Advisors was founded, cost containment firm that helped insurance companies audit and settle high dollar medical claims. Sounds like a lot of gobbledygook. Maybe I should just explain it a little simpler, right? Maybe, so imagine you go to the hospital and you have something really wrong with you and you rack up a few $1 million claim. Well, the insurance company just doesn't write that check. They got to check the charges. They got to make sure that they're authentic and legitimate. And built the company around identifying billing and coding errors, overcharges on hospital claims. Grew the company very successfully, right? Bootstrapped it. And one day in the summer of 2017, somebody came and offered us a lot of money to sell it. And hummed and hawed, and somebody offers us even more, and I took it. But going into that, I had done a fair amount of preparation in getting the company ready for sale and getting kind of my next act together, right? 42 years old, I couldn't possibly retire, right? It just wasn't even a reality, right? I mean, we're gonna sit around and play golf all day long. It's just not, I only play so much golf, you know, and at 42 years old, I needed to figure out what was next. And I really needed a lifestyle business that fit around the things that were important to me personally, you know, giving back to charity with my time. And at the same time, also being able to travel with my wife, right, and see the world. So hence, being an M&A advisor and business broker made a lot of sense.
When you sold the business, was that a direct sale? That buyer came to you, made an offer, and yeah, just dealt with it that way?
They came to me, they made an offer, and 90 days later, it was done. Due diligence was easy peasy lemon squeezy, because I already had planned for it, right? At that point, I had already completed the Certified Exit Planning Advisor program, so I knew what was coming. Do it yourself, for sale by owner, without being for sale, right?
Yeah.
And I struggle because I made a lot of mistakes along the way. I'm going to talk about that eventually when we get there today. The biggest one that cost me a lot of money. That's why I advise people, don't try to do it yourself, right? So just because you have a strategic, you know, emailing you as a seller saying, hey, I want to buy your company, get a good advisor, right? Because what you don't know is going to cost you a lot of money. Strategics are usually private equity backed. Private equity backed organizations are professional buyers, right?
Yeah.
Private equity is professional buyers of business. And for most business owners, they'll only sell their business once, right? So they're not equipped to handle a private equity professional buyer. And as a result, they'll get burned, right? Just like I did.
Yeah.
Right. So, it's interesting, right? Cause I get asked that question a lot. Well, why don't I just sell my business without you? Well, you can try that, but you don't know what you don't know. And I know what you don't know. So that's what you're paying me for, right? Plus I'm a big proponent of, as a business owner, you should keep your foot on the gas pedal and run the business and hire a professional like me to run the deal, right? That's my job. I run deals. Your job is to run your business. My job is to run the deal. And when you're focused on running the deal and the business, you're divided. And one little misstep and the buyer will smell blood in the water and they'll retrade the deal. Seen it happen too many times.
And the real world challenge is that when that business owner tries to do both, they're focused on the deal, probably because they're doing the deal because they want to exit, and or they're burnt out, or they have future plans, or they're already envisioning that future, which means they're not in the present, which means they take the foot off the gas of the business. And then, like you said, with that professional buyer, updated financials, due diligence, things happen. It's like, wait, this isn't the business you told us about. Why is everything dropping in the revenue or the financials category? And, you know, like retrade the deal, like you said. Let's talk about that. So, you know, second act, I love the fact that you were planning for that before you exited. So you had everything ready, but still there were mistakes. There were areas where it didn't go well and or you lost out. You know, where did that play into the book? And then let's start talking about some of those biggest lessons that you put into the Sweat Equity Payday.
Yeah, you know, the Sweat Equity Payday is that opus. It describes my own experience selling my company and then the experience as an advisor helping other people sell their businesses, right? And it's my life lessons that I've learned and picked up along the way. I mean, you get the book and read it, you'll realize it sounds just like me because it's just like me. The way I talk, a Jersey guy, right? So you'll get it, right? Like my favorite chapter title, Negotiate Like a Terrorist. That's a fun one, right? One of my most famous, tongue-in-cheek phrases that I use all the time, right? Another one is, mm-hmm. Don't hire your cousin Vinny, right? Because, you know, just because Uncle Tom tells you at dinner on Sunday to make sure that his kid gets hired for some work doesn't mean you should hire him when you're, you know, looking for an attorney. Maybe he does divorce law, or maybe he, does a different discipline of law. Well, when you're selling your most valuable asset, you need to make sure you got the right deal team in place, right? So I think that's an important thing that the book kind of hits home on, right? In order to sell your business on your terms and hit the number you want, you got to build the team so that when the exit comes, you know, you're ready. It's ready. The team is in place, right? I'll talk about this always, constantly, always be sell ready, because we never know when one of the five D's are going to come up, right? Death, disability, divorce, disagreement, or downturn in the market, right? So you got to always be sell ready, right? Everyone will exit their business, whether they like it or not. You're going to either exit vertically or horizontally, but everyone will exit their business, right? So be sell ready. Be ready for the next sale, whether that be an internal sale to a family member or management, or whether that be an external sale. Always be sell ready.
So let's talk about that one. We'll go in reverse to the more controversial. The publisher didn't want that chapter in the book. We'll talk about that last. Is always be deal ready. Like, I know what I think, but I want to know, because you have all the experience in this realm, is what leads to business owners and companies not being sale ready in a moment?
So some companies are jobs. They're masquerading as sellable companies, right? So when the owner is the hub and spoke in the middle of a small business, guess what happens? It's very hard to find somebody to transfer that job to at a price which the current owner feels it's worth. And that's very difficult to explain to business owners that you don't really have a business, you have a great job. And I'm only going to be able to get you maybe 1.5 times what you made. Well, why don't I just hold the business for 1.5? And maybe you should. And hence, this goes back to a statistic that I've heard time and time again. Whether or not it's true, I really have no idea, but it seems to make sense that only 1 out of every 5 small businesses will actually sell. And when you think about what I just said, which is that there's low multiples and I have a choice, I can sell my business for maybe 1.5 times, or I can hang around for another 18 months. Well, I'm just going to hang around for 18 months because I don't want to have to deal with the sale process.
Yeah.
And I think that that's something that a lot of people don't take into consideration, right? Is this, the smaller the business, the harder it is to sell. And even sometimes, you got businesses that are worth $1.5-2 million. It's still just buying a job. You're buying a job. So what makes a company not sell ready starts with that. A heavy reliance on the business owner, right? And I'm going to work around the circle here that I talk about a lot. Heavy reliance on the business owner. Okay. Overdependence on one vendor.
Mm-hmm.
Key man risk of employee problems and customer concentration. Right. If you have any one of those problems, don't call me and expect a premium for the sale of your business. It's not going to happen. And when you have all of those problems, you may not have a sellable business.
Yeah.
So go through the process of de-risking. Right. I talk about that a lot. Go through the process of de-risking your business. Right. And those are the areas you want to de-risk: owner, employee, vendor, customer. De-risk that. Mm. And the last thing that I'm going to talk about relative to not being sell ready is the books.
Mm.
You should see what I see. And how many times I hear the following phrase: Mark, I have to confess something to you. But stop. I am not your attorney, nor am I your priest. As a result, whatever you tell me, I may have to tell a judge. So be careful and choose your words smartly as to what comes out of your mouth next.
I love
it. Because the books, I've seen it all, right? I've seen shenanigans and hooligans squared on books. And it happens quite frequently. Not going to deny it, right? Mm-hmm. And as I explain to people from time to time, when you've cheated the IRS, you've gotten the benefit. Do not expect to double dip and have a buyer pay for that.
Mm.
So if you're going to sell your business, my advice is 36 months out at a minimum, square your books up fast. Stop the shenanigans and hooligans with the cash. Knock it off with the family vacations. Get your son Tommy, who does nothing because he's a freshman at college, off the books, right? This has to happen, right? You want a premium, you want to sell your business easy? Guess what? We need to have as few ad backs as possible.
Yeah.
And when I say this, it's tough talk. Right. And if you don't want to listen, great. Then maybe I'm not the right advisor for you. And that's just the reality.
Yeah. And I think what's interesting in that, the round the wheel and that circle for always being sale ready is, again, these are the things that are going to lead to someone having a successful exit. That's going to go as simple as possible and then also get them a good multiple in the money they want. And it's interesting when I think of that job mode where maybe it's not going to be very good. They decide, well, why don't I just hold on to it for 18 months? And then you think of reality, which is what could happen in 18 months. And then at the end of 18 months, is it any better or different? Or are they more burnt out? Or they just decide to shut it down because that would just be easier, or going back to the 5 D's. And so then, like, what do you really have versus what do you think you have for the market?
Correct. So I realized that I was the hub and spoke at my business with Ethicare, right? And I knew that that was going to be a problem after I read John Warlow's book, Built to Sell. John actually wrote the foreword to my book. I've known him for many years. Great guy. Business owners and their advisors are all recommended by me to read that book time and time again. I mean, you should read it 3 or 4 times. It's a great book. Mm-hmm. So I'll tell you, when I sold Ethicare to a competitor backed by private equity, my employment agreement was for 60 days. Mm. After that, it was kind of an ad hoc basis. They would call me if they need me kind of thing. But I only had to work for 60 days. So I sold an eight-figure business with a 60-day transition. Why? Because I made myself useless at my own company, right?
Yeah.
I didn't do the work anymore. I didn't do the sales. I just did the high-level management, right? That's all I did.
Yeah.
It was easy. It was easy to step in Mark's shoes and be Mark, right? So,
right.
And that was done deliberately. I was sell ready. There was no recasting needed of my books. My books and records were clean, and it made going through the process a lot easier.
Yeah, and I think when I speak with brokers and I think about this conversation, I think about business owners, and I think the general request would be, you know, 36 months in advance, start your planning and do that. Yet, you know, how often does that happen? Like, how often are you seeing that? Or when you're getting approached, how many times, and this would be a valid question for you, how many times when, you know, you talk to a business owner who wants to exit, you tell them, we got a lot of work to do. And then they're like, okay, sounds good. Let's do that for the next 2 to 3 years.
You know, the larger the business, the more deal ready they are. And it's not on purpose. It's generally just good business practices.
Mm, got it.
Right. So smaller businesses tend to be less formal with their policies and procedures, right? They tend to be less formal with their accounting. Maybe the owner does the bookkeeping, or the wife of the owner does the bookkeeping, something like that, right? Whereas you move to a business that's doing, you know, $1 million a month in sales, you have usually a bookkeeper on staff or a controller on staff, right? So inevitably you have those things. If there's bank financing of a larger company, they have reviewed financial statements from the accountant, right? So that's all done and in place, ready to go for me, right? So whether by design or accident, larger companies usually are more sell ready than smaller businesses. That's not to say I haven't seen both. I can assure you of that, in both directions. Right. But I do think that just by virtue of the complexities of running a larger business, inevitably, they're more sell ready.
Yeah. What going back in the list that you started with when you're talking through the book, what do you think gets in the way of a business owner building that deal team with like the all the people that's needed on the team?
Money. They're afraid to spend money. Yep. Because they're not sure the business is going to sell. Mm. Right. They don't know if it's going to end up that they get to close to the closing table and the buyer is going to walk away. And now they've just invested all this money in the accountant, the lawyer, and the M&A advisor, and it's for nothing. They don't know that they're really ready to sell, right? Some business owners, they tell you they're ready to sell, but when it comes time to it, they're just so emotionally engaged and attached to their business. It's like if I called you up and said, Jason, can I buy one of your kids? Because that's what it's like for a lot of business owners. Right. You know, you're like, you're buying their baby, right? And that's just very difficult, especially when you talk about businesses that are on the second or third generation, right? Mm-hmm. That becomes completely different. So business owners are naturally adverse to wasting money, right? You know, they're just, you know, good ones are frugal. And when it comes to hiring the deal team, it's just truly a matter of money. You know, they're not sure that the person they're hiring will get them the results they need.
Before a seller ever speaks to you, they look you up. They scan your name, they search your LinkedIn, they read your last few posts. And in about 60 seconds, they decide whether you feel like a trusted advisor or just another broker. Most brokers never see that moment, but it happens every day. That's why we built the Digital Impact Assessment. It's a structured evaluation of how your online presence actually shows up in 4 ways. Authority, positioning, visibility, and engagement. And if you want to know what sellers are seeing before they book a call with you, just remember you can't improve what you don't measure. All right, now back to this amazing conversation.
You know, they're not sure that that the person they're hiring will get them the results they need.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it makes sense. And I think about too, some of the resistance I hear a lot from brokers with business owners, especially through due diligence, the prep and then the due diligence with a buyer that's ready is, you know, you mentioned it's like somebody buying their baby or wanting to buy their baby and then them feeling attacked when they say the baby isn't perfect or is ugly. And it's just like, you know, because of the financials or because, you know, they've kept Sue on the payroll for so long, but what does Sue really do? And she's not very good at it, or this lease they have, whatever. Like, how do you deal with that? Or is that just selecting the right client on your side of like somebody who is prepared to mentally and physically prepared?
All right. So in my head, I've always said this, and now it's going to come out live on your podcast. Here we go. Ready? People ask what I do. And in my head, the first thing that comes out of my mind is I want to scream, I sell ugly babies.
I love it.
You know, it's, you know, this is tough, right? The psychology of selling businesses between the buyer and the seller is 85% of what I do, right? Mm-hmm. The debits and credits are done by the debits and credits people. The legal mumbo jumbo is done by the lawyers, right? My job, 15% after we go under LOI, is to play quarterback. 85% is to be empathetic and a tough guy, sometimes in the same sentence. So I asked I closed the deal and last day of January, right? Great guy. I asked him for a quote and he said, here's one for you. Thank you for the wisdom, the grace, and the bitch slaps. Because a couple of times I had to, you know, I had to give it to him, right? I had to talk honest with him. And I think that you have to have that relationship with your client, the seller, right? And you have to develop quickly that relationship with a buyer. Right. Mm-hmm. So 85% of the day is psychology. Right. Mm-hmm. And if you're not good at that, you're going to be a really bad business broker. You have to really be good at the psychology of things and understanding why people are saying what they're saying, and then helping them to process where things are at in the deal flow. Right. And I think that's something that, you know, I go to the business brokers convention setting usually every year, every other year, and you can just see who's going to be an amazing business broker. You know, you get the ones with the badge and it says first time attendee. And I look at them and I'm like, yeah, they're never coming back. They're never going to succeed in this business. And then I see ones first time attendees and I'm like, oh, that one's good. Yeah, they're going to be really great business brokers, right? You can just tell. You can tell who they are. You can tell a mile away.
Yeah.
And I think that's the profession of business brokering is a low barrier to entry, unfortunately, right? And I'm not talking about the stupid licensure in a few states. I'm just talking about anybody can hang a shingle up and say, I'm a business broker, right? But until you get into the thick of it, you don't really know what you're getting into. And every one of these deals takes on a life of its own, right? Every one of them, right? I've seen deals go north, south, east, and west. Sometimes as quick as the wind blows, it changes, right? That's just the reality of the occupation, right? And that's, to me, that's what keeps me engaged and interested, right? I don't do this necessarily because I need a paycheck, right? I've had my 8-figure payout. I do this because A, I really, 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 really love the process. And B, I feel like somehow or another, I'm helping everybody get their sweat equity payday, right? And I think that's pretty cool, right? Like, business owners, we all invest extra time in our business. And sure, we've been compensated along the way, but think about all those times you traveled and you missed Sunday dinner, or, you know, you missed a family member's birthday party, right? You didn't really get compensated for that. Then you sell your business, there's the paycheck. There it is right there. And that's, I think it. Helping people get that is cool.
Yeah. And I think what's fascinating, if we think about the world of sales, and relationships and sales. And I think about some of the things you were just saying. And one of the key principles for sales is you can never want the deal more than the other person. If you're listening to this and thinking, I need this level of authority, I just don't have time to build it, that's exactly what Business Broker Growth does for you. Most brokers know that they need consistent content, better positioning, and real digital visibility. They just don't have the bandwidth to create it or the systems to keep it going. That's what we do here. We build that whole thing for you. The content engine, the visibility strategy, and the authority signals, everything we've talked about here on the podcast. So if you want to add impact without adding another full-time job to your plate, go to businessbrokergrowth.com to learn more about what it could look like for your business. And relationships and sales. And I think about some of the things you were just saying. And one of the key principles for sales is you can never want the deal more than the other person, because as soon as that happens, like the other party has all the control. And so what's fascinating about you, Mark, is not just the New Jersey bit of you and what that means for what you say and what you think, but I think it's also because of the exit you had and the fact that you don't need to be a business broker, but you do it because you enjoy it. But then also you feel called to the mission, like you said, tying it back to what you want to do for other business owners to help them have that payday, right? And I firmly believe that. We've spoke many times, and usually I can tell when somebody's just saying something that sounds good marketing-wise, but I truly feel like you're playing this game because it means something to you in a way that's different, which also then translates to the emotional intelligence, the empathy, and then the tough love that you tell a business owner. Because if you don't do it, the deal's going to fall apart, and you're not doing it for the deal, you're doing it for them. And this isn't your deal. You're going to shoot straight with them. And I could see where that's an issue sometimes, because business owners, especially if you get to a certain level, people don't talk to you like that. They don't tell you that, right? They don't bitch slap you to your face and tell you things that, you know, you don't want to hear. Yet here you are, and they're paying you to do this, which is the fascinating part. But in the focus of helping them get what they said they wanted. You said you wanted this. You ready? Because
correct. It all boils down to the upfront contract, right? And I'm not talking about the piece of paper, right?
No.
I'm talking about the understanding that A, I was a founder. B, I exited for a lot of money. C, I know exactly what I'm doing. Trust me, I've done it for many other people. And D, you have to trust the process and let me do what I do, right? And I will personally tell you when it's time to put your foot on the gas pedal and speed in the direction of north. And I'll also tell you that when going north, you're going down a one-way street the wrong way, right? That's my job. Ultimately, so long as it's not illegal, I'll probably go along with you, right? But in all reality, you have to have this upfront contract, this understanding with business owners that you hired me for a reason.
Yeah, it's interesting, because I remember upfront contracts when I used to do sales consulting and sales related projects, and many business owners would be like, okay, so you can help all my team succeed. I said, no, but here's what I will do. I'll tell you which ones are going to make it and then which ones you should probably let go really quickly. Because I'm not promising that all of them are going to make it, but I will make sure that you're set up for success. And then from there, the expectation is set. That upfront contract in sales is so important verbally. So let's talk about the other chapter, because this is a fun one. You know, it's a fun one. You know, it's a hot topic. I think you're edgy enough. You had to put it in there. So let's talk about negotiating like a terrorist and what that means. I remember when you mentioned it, I remember when I read it, and I was like, okay, this makes sense. And, you know, obviously, maybe polarizing, which I love.
Of course. Listen, I wanted to write the book, Negotiate Like a Terrorist. And the publisher's like, Mark, he's like, Amazon's not gonna treat that very well. And I'm like, but why not? What's the problem? Right? So like, it's a little tongue in cheek, but it's really not. Like, I respect the fact that, you know, you go in and you negotiate tough for the things that are the most important to you. And the things that, you know, are not as important that you've asked for, you'll give the other side a win, right? So if there's 10 things you're demanding, well, maybe you give up on 4 of them, knowing you really never wanted them in the first place, but you have huge wins on 6 things, right? Mm-hmm. That to me is genius, right? And when you're negotiating these transactions, you have to be flexible. I tell that to people all the time. Buyers and sellers, you got to be flexible, right? Mm-hmm. And if you're not going to be flexible, you're going to be rigid. Best have a darn good reason why you're being rigid on a topic, right? Because it's just going to work against you. It really is. You're not going to get the deal done.
Yeah. Yeah. And then when you think about it too, is which ones are the must-haves, which ones are the,
yes,
is the whole mission and purpose, like you said, out of the 10 things. And then which ones are the nice to have or the concessions you're already planning. If something comes up, I can barter, I can trade these things to get the other.
But you know, a lot of this comes back to that upfront contract. It's not just about my relationship with the seller, but it's about the expectations about what they're going to have to sign at the end of the day, right? Reps and warranties. Everyone loves those. Nah. It's about, you know, what you can expect in terms of an employment agreement afterwards, right? If you think that you're going to sign on the dotted line and hand the keys over with no transition, think again. It just doesn't work like that, right? Small businesses, lower middle market businesses don't transfer that way, right? You're sticking around for a period of time. And depending on your involvement day to day determines how long that period of time is, right? So having these continual discussions with business owners throughout the process, keeping them in the loop and understanding what's next and what's going to be expected of them in each one of the stages as we go along and what they're going to expect at the end of the day at the closing table, right? When the paper packet's essentially this thick, although everybody's digitally signing these days, but when you get the final book, it'll be this big. And, you have to continually educate them and you have to talk about things until A, you're blue in the face three different ways, right? Because business owners, you hear what they want to hear sometimes, just reality. Mm-hmm. I was the same way.
Yep.
I know.
Yeah. And it's just true. It's just, it's human nature. Like you said, it's spending most of the day on psychology, human behavior, like all of those aspects, like the transaction part is almost secondary to that. Once you understand and good at the transaction part, like you are.
Correct. But again, you have to get that right. If you don't get that right, deal's going to blow up.
Yeah. All right. Now, one part you had said to me, and I want to move into the marketing section. So this is the rapid fire, the business broker growth. This is what you found. You know, obviously you exited, you had a plan, you went into this somewhat lifestyle business, actual lifestyle business. So you could do this, but obviously you've got to attract some clients. So there's things you do in the marketing side. And then like to kind of kick this off, I know that one of the things you had told me is that, you know, what used to work no longer works, what worked yesterday, won't work today kind of mode. And so as you've been growing this focus and very specific brokerage practice of yours, like what are the things from a marketing growth strategy side that you found that works?
This is so tough, right? So if you're watching this in the first or second quarter of 2026, there's a high probability what I'm going to say might be relevant. But you know, it used to be business at the speed of thought. Remember what's his name wrote that book? And now it's marketing at the speed of thought, right? It's changed so much. So obviously referral marketing is the bread and butter that works for me. I use a CRM to track my referral partners. And apparently I might be the only person in the world that does that, because when I did last year at the Business Brokers Convention, I did a session on this. It's actually recorded. You can actually buy it from the IBBA. And apparently that was a novel idea. So, I track my referral. So referral marketing is a key part, because financial advisors, accountants, and, lawyers certainly have, the ear of business owners. One, two, as I now have the book published and it is a bestseller on Amazon, it's providing new opportunities for me in terms of being on podcasts and a really great deliverable to get out to business owners. You know, hey, read the book. And it's not going to tell you how to sell your business. It's going to tell you how to get your business ready for sale and what to expect during the process. It's not a do-it-yourself book. If I wrote a do-it-yourself book, it would be bigger than the Bible because of all you have to know, right? But I've thought about that. I really have thought about the sell your business, you know, without a business broker, you know, FSBO yourself, for sale by owner your business. Because I think that once somebody read that book as a business owner, they'd be like, I have to know all this. I have to do all this. These are all the issues. I got to hire an M&A advisor. I got to hire a business broker, right? It would force them to actually hire me. But,
if you think about it, right, like that strategy is good to give everything away, and then it will really like separate the people, because somebody could read a manual on how to build their own car. And there's a certain percentage of people who are like, yeah, that sounds fun. I would like to do that. Right. And then most everyone be like, I will buy a car. I would rather spend my time making the money to buy the car than to actually make the car. And so to your point, like that would be fascinating, but then how do you cover every scenario of every business situation to help with that? Like, that would be so many volumes of book.
Correct. I thought about doing it in a way where I get like, to make it my life a lot easier, I get a dozen business brokers to each write a chapter on something.
Right? There you go.
Because it would be a huge book.
Yeah. Okay. So the referral partner CRM, writing the book and having the book, which I've always thought was a really good way to go. We work with people. I think anything physical, anything tangible, yes, eBooks are great. All the digital stuff is good, but not just because of your, you know, generally thought of, you know, retiring baby boomer type of audience where a physical book means more, but there's also just something for anybody where a physical book, a magazine, like something physical just gives so much more credibility.
It's not just about credibility. It's the mode in which 60 and 70 year olds like to work in, right? It's what they're used to, right? Yeah. Not getting spammed by emails every day, right? Because those are just noise to them, just click and delete and moving on, right? Mm-hmm. They're getting inundated as it is from, private equity firms who have decided to bypass the M&A world, right? And business broker world and go direct, right? So it's just one spam after another, right? Whether it's, this offer or that offer or the other offer, they're getting it every day. I know, because I'm getting them too. Right?
Yeah, and it's interesting. And this is advice I've told salespeople a long time ago, I've been saying for a long time, is when in doubt, just do the opposite of what you think a salesperson should do, right? So instead of like, how do I just send more emails per day? How do I do what would be different than others, but also what would my audience actually want to receive?
Correct. And that's why I go back to the book.
What else would you put on the list? I know that there's, you know, in the sales related things, there's always be sale ready, which we talked about. What other than the referrals, the books, like what do you see as valuable, especially right now in this age of so much technology that can speed things up?
It's tough. I know what's working for me, and that's what's working for me. Anything else I've tried? You know, I've tried to hire a few vendors to do some advertising to bring in opportunities, but it hasn't paid, right? It's almost a negative ROI on some of those. So I try not to go down those paths, right? I don't think it makes a lot of sense for my practice and what I do.
And one of the things I appreciate about you is how much you know that you know you. As well as you know what you want to build and you know what works that fits with you, right? On the authentic, like marketing side, right? You don't want to host a podcast. You don't want to mass email the world. You want to use your book as a vehicle. You want to build referrals. And I appreciate the fact that you're not chasing shiny things, or maybe you have in the past and you've learned, like, no, just stick with what you're good at or what you know works and fits for you.
Yeah, I don't chase shiny things and never have, and I don't think I ever will, right?
Yeah.
I think that there is there's a lot that could be done with some of this new technology that's out there. The podcast thing's interesting to me. I can't deny that. I just look at the podcast demographic and say, it's not 60 plus year old business owners. So why would I, you know, why would I host my own podcast when they're not going to listen anyway? Right.
Yeah.
And they're like, well, you know, you could do this or that. First off, it's just not me. Secondly, I don't think my people are listening. Thirdly, I operate with the exact opposite philosophy of nearly every other business owner, business broker out there. Ready? Red velvet rope. So I put the red velvet rope up, just like at the nightclub in New York City, and I only let a few people come past. Why? Because I just don't have time, patience, or energy in my day to deal with a-hole customers, right? I don't want it. I don't care about it. I want to work with people that I know, like, and trust. Remember that phrase from sales, right? People only do business with people they know, like, and trust. Well, if I don't like you, guess what? Bye-bye. Time to go.
Yeah.
And I think that's important. That's why on the, you know, I get to know a business owner before I send them a listing agreement. I'm not looking to put 20 listings on the board and only close 10% of them. Just not who I am. I want to close them all, right? Nearly 90% success ratio of my career as a business broker. Why? Because I do a lot of upfront contracting. I make sure that a business owner understands what they're going to get when they hire me. I make sure that they know, you know, reasonably what the price range is I'm going to get them. And if we can't agree on a price that I think I'm going to get them, I'm not even going to take the listing just so I can browbeat them later on and say, oh, well, you know, there's been no offers at $250,000. So let's lower it to 185. No, let's not. Let's start with the right price to begin with. And if you and I can't agree on the right price, I wish you the best of luck. Check the IBBA. You'll find plenty of business brokers that'll take your listing. Yeah. And that's just a completely different business philosophy than most other business brokers who operate this, throw as much against the wall and see what sticks shenanigans. It's just not me.
Yeah. You are in the category of red rope, white gloves.
Yeah. Yep. And I think that there's a lot of business owners that exactly want that. And I'm willing to give it to them. And there's other business owners that want to pay the lowest amount possible, have a business broker, throw the listing on biz buy sell and wait for the phone to ring. If you're the type of business owner that wants that, there's plenty of business brokers out there. I wish you the best of luck. And it does work. I'm not denying that. It does work. But so does my strategy of white glove, one or two at a time, direct outreach, create a bidding war, see where it goes.
Yeah.
Very different philosophy.
Yeah. Yeah. And really, you know, the question would be is, does it work the other way? And the stats, again, the generally discussed stats, like you mentioned earlier, 1 in 5, right? So 20% actually close and sale. I would say that doesn't work. There's some missing piece in the other formulas.
You know, I think some of this is business owners, business brokers have been conditioned to hunt listings, right? And I think that's wrong. I do. Mm. I think the answer is you want to find listings that'll sell. You can't waste time. Look, I track hours on every deal, right? It takes between 200 and 400 hours to close a transaction, right? If you assume there are 2,000 work hours in a year and you need to spend time marketing, how many transactions can you really effectively manage at one time?
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And that's why there's such a failure rate in this business, right? They go in, they get 10 listings, they close one or two, they've worked their butt off, they're burnt out. I got to go get a job next.
Yeah. And I think that's interesting. One question, I'm going to do things kind of different here with our conversation, with the time that we have today. I want to, instead of talking about the deal that got away, because I know the success rate and we've covered, like, literally, I feel like instead of talking about the deal that got away, which would be somebody who didn't fall in those parameters, we'd know what the parameters are if you just want to be successful. Like, I think it's great. And then I think, you know, because having read the book, I think it's a great part. What do you see in over the next 5 years or in 5 years, which would now be 2031, what it would take for business brokers, M&A intermediaries to be successful?
Boy, that's interesting. So as the boomers continue to sell their businesses, And we have people who are, you know, currently now 55 years old, right? It's going to change things, right? Because I do think that the boomers do want that white glove, high touch, personalized feel. I'm thinking that there could be more room in the future for platforms to connect buyers and sellers.
Interesting. Meaning yeah. What? Talk more about that.
I could foresee scenarios where platforms will be utilized more, tech-enabled platforms will be utilized more to help connect buyers and sellers.
Okay.
Yeah, in a more efficient way with more simplified contracting. Contracting is part of the problem, this whole business, right? It's a mess. Not listing contracting, the deal transaction documents is a big mess. Mm. So I think that some simplification around that may occur as a result of technology being more affordable and easier to distill down.
Got it.
I could be wrong.
And so then where do you see the role of the broker intermediary?
It'll be interesting to see whether on the Main Street deals, those guys get squeezed out. Mm-hmm. I still think at deals, you know, 5 to 50 million, there's going to be people like me involved. Mm-hmm. Right. I think that'll happen all the way to the end of time. That's just the way I think about that. But I think on the smaller deals where there's not as much money in the equation, sellers may, in the interest of keeping more of a smaller dollar amount in sale proceeds, they may be more inclined to give up a certain service that they get.
Yeah, that's interesting to think about, especially if you think of a smaller business, a Main Street business probably isn't paying to do things like gap accounting. So they don't have all of that structure, the transaction's simpler if they've done their job to be ready to sell and the financials are in order. I think I could see where that is. And then the question will always be, you know, with buyers are generally more experienced at buying than a seller is at selling, because the buyers are making lots of offers, they're having conversations. And where is that imbalance always just going to favor the buyers in the transaction? And where will technology even that out? It's fascinating when you think about it.
I think so. I do.
Yeah. Yeah.
Where it could just be the same as it is today. I don't know.
Who knows? If you think about it, you could say, well, it could just be the same and technology won't replace it. It's like, well, look at everything that technology has done in the last 3 years, right? That we didn't think was going to speed, you know, go through this fast of an evolution with what's available here, you know, first quarter of 2026. And so mm-hmm. You know, what's it going to be like by the end of this year? And then imagine 5 years. And then when does it even out to a valuable tool that just helps in this world, you know, the transactions?
It's we live in fun times, right? Yeah. I think back to when the internet really started to have some mass adoption, when we had dial up way back when, and then all of a sudden we get this broadband thing, which is not even look like or sound like anything that we have today, right? But I kind of think this is the next version of computing, right? This whole, you know, AI movement, machine learning, right? We'll see where it ends up. You know, I think good things are going to come for all industries.
Right? Yeah. Yeah. And I think there will be a level set to once it gets adopted. If you think of like the .com boom, there was a period there where it was taking off and everything was going to be internet and everything was going to be websites and everything was exploding and all this money was being made. And then it kind of settled down. And so, you know, where will that happen with this and become something that's, you know, a good, valuable norm? So I think it'll be interesting.
Oh, these are fun times we live in all the way around.
Yeah. And then what's interesting, and again, you think of the, you know, the silver tsunami, the baby boomer, you know, type of client that you're focused on, and then where technology is moving so fast. And then how does that play well with others? Because you don't have a group that's necessarily like, nobody came with this. Nobody's used to this. They're not being raised with this technology. And so Where is it going to be helpful? Or is it going to leave some behind?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to stay on top of it, even somebody my age, right? I mean, it's just crazy.
Yeah, for sure. Well, Mark, I appreciate you coming on here. This has been fun and valuable. And again, one of the reasons why I enjoyed this, why I was looking forward to this, and why I enjoy chatting with you is that you are very specific. I love, like, anybody check it out. This is not a paid product placement for the book. I just think it's valuable from a been there, done that, gone through it, now helping others, the Sweat Equity Playbook. Like, I just, again, I've read it. I think it's a great book. But I just appreciate you, Mark, with like what you're doing, why you're doing it. You want to do it, not because you have to, but because you feel called to do it. And then, you know, whereas you help these people, you don't help these other people, and that's okay. And I really appreciate that about you.
Thanks, Chase. I really appreciate the opportunity to come on today.
Yeah. And for everyone tuning in, if you want to get in touch with Mark, if you like the things that he said, if you want to overwhelm his pipeline and his schedule, you want to reach out to him and talk to him about this, you can go to hartmanroads.com. I'll have the links in the show notes. You can also find him, Mark Hartman, H-A-R-T-M-A-N-N. You can find him on LinkedIn. You can find his book on Amazon. Should be easy to find, bestseller status. Great job on that, Mark. And for everyone tuning in, you know, I do this because I really enjoy these conversations and I really enjoy spotlighting quality brokers and professionals out there in the market who are doing things in a way that will produce the right results for their clients, for the people they're working with, and for the industry as a whole. And so that's why I do this. That's why I love having conversations with Mark and the other guests that come on the show. So please share this, please follow, please let's get more of this content out there. Mark will never start his own podcast, I'm pretty sure, based on the conversations we've had, and that's okay. But let's at least get this out there and swing it more in the positive side, help educate business owners, brokers, just improve the industry as a whole, at least till AI takes over and we're all just working for them. So thank you for all your support of the show. And until next time, stop hoping for deals and start growing your pipeline. Thank you.
Thanks for tuning in to the Business Broker Growth Show hosted by Jason Cutter. If today's episode helped you think differently about how to build your pipeline and grow your business, share it with another broker who's ready to make the shift from hoping for listings to engineering them. Join us again for the next episode of the Business Broker Growth Show, where brokers become trusted advisors.